Thanks, Chris and the team. Just lower Lynn a bit so I can see to my left. Easter in Corinth, we're at the first of a new short series leading up to Easter. I think there's three of these. And the first is this. Are we up and running, Neil? Oh, thank you. There we go. Oh, look at that. I can see what's behind me in front of me. This is so good. Quentin, yeah, if anybody wants a Bible, just raise your hand and Quentin will bring one round. We're in 1 Corinthians. Now, I'm going to start off with some congregational participation. The reason for this is that I want to really confuse you. That's my intention this morning. And if you think you know the difference between wisdom and foolishness, then I hope by the end of this sermon that you will be confused. That's the intention. Now, let's just move this on one. I'd like you to think, if you will, of something which is wise. Now, I've put a few thoughts, because wise maybe isn't a word we use that often these days, but something sensible, something logical, something educated. I noticed Michelle came up this morning to give her announcement. She's got her Big Bang Theory sweatshirt on. Well, is that wisdom? Is it foolishness? You see, and foolishness is maybe stupid, maybe irrational. That's the word I put up there. Ignorant, something you know that is illogical, something that doesn't make sense. That is foolishness. That is wisdom. Now, I'd like you to think of one thing which is either foolish or wise. Maybe if you're really smart, you could think of one of each, and then we'll have a little bit of feedback in a moment when you've had a thought. And meanwhile, a little bit of an introduction to the subject. Corinth, first of all. Corinth, I'll just move that out of the way. Corinth is a city in Greece, second city in the country. Athens was the capital. Corinth was the second city. And Paul came down to Corinth from Athens, and in there he met, in the city, he met a couple. If you were here a few weeks ago, Jeff spoke about Aquila and Priscilla. They'd come from Rome, and he met up with them in Corinth, and he joined them in their business of making tents, and he was there for a period of about 18 months or so, and it was during that time that the church in Corinth was established. Now, there'd been a big Jewish community in Corinth at that time, who I guess would have been the core of the church. And clearly the Jewish side in the church would have been important, particularly maybe as we think about Easter, which of course is the time of Passover. But the Greeks of Greece and of Corinth were great thinkers. They were great philosophers, and a lot of the philosophy that's come down to us even thousands of years later comes from that time. People like Plato and Socrates and Epicurus and so on. They loved to debate and to argue, and they were great seekers after wisdom and knowledge. So that's the sort of the background of Corinth as a city. Easter, well, a bit of an odd term, really. I guess it hadn't really been heard of when Paul wrote this letter. There would have been, as I say, a big Jewish community in the city, and the Passover was a big festival for the Jews, and I guess over the years that would have morphed into the celebration of Jesus' death and resurrection. There's no particular historical record until nearly 100 years later of an annual festival celebrating Jesus' death and resurrection. And of course the name Easter, which comes from a pagan goddess of fertility, didn't appear for maybe another 600-700 years after that, and from her comes eggs and bunny rabbits and flowers and all that sort of stuff. So there we go. That's the background of the celebration of Easter in Corinth, or of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ in Corinth. Now, foolishness and wisdom. Any suggestions? Anybody got anything that they'd like to share which they feel is foolish or wise? You know, a thought, a John's got something, I can see he's...
Well, certainly because I live activated.
Right.
Live 12, the rich, young, the rich, fool.
Right, and he was foolish, or he was... Tell us a little bit more.
He was foolish because he built more barns for his grain.
Ah, that one. Yes, I know.
And he didn't... I don't think he gave anything away, so he didn't really seek the Lord about it.
Okay.
He looked after himself. And Jesus said he was a fool.
Jesus said he was a fool for that. Okay. Now, fine. Any other thoughts? And not necessarily from the Bible. Just everyday stuff. Got one at back end.
Sowing seeds when the ground is frozen.
Sowing seeds when the ground is frozen. Is that foolish? Or is that a wise thing to do? Okay. Well, look. I'm going to show you a short video now, and I want you to think about this as it goes ahead. It's a bus ride from Pokhara up to Kathmandu in Nepal. It's just a short section of it, and those of you, and a few of you may have made this trip, as you head up towards Kathmandu, on your left is the Trisuli River. Up to 300-400 feet below you, and on the right is hills. Lots of blind corners, very slow, long uphill drag for maybe 4 or 5 hours. In the video, you'll see on your left some of the things which may happen. This was taken on a trip just last year, and then, well, see what you think at the end. You might need a bit of sound. Okay, accident number one. Okay, quick one here, accident number two coming up. Okay, that's the right thing. Bit of overtaking. What do you think? Are we going to make it? Yeah, we do. It's okay. Stuck in the way here. Get past that one. Right, another bit of a hold up. Ambulance overtaking. Car coming the other way at the same time. What's going to happen? Everything stops. Oh, the truck on the right. Okay, we're clear. So, let's overtake. Go for the bus. Go, 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 go. Yes! Yeah, we're going to make the first one. Yeah, we're making the first one. Oh, it's a motorbike coming! Ah! Oh, right, so we're past. We're through, and we're back on the right side of the road just in time before another truck. Oh, we've got a load of gas containers here. We'll take the old truck coming the other way. And we've got a bit clear over here, I think. Maybe. Just, there's something coming. No, we're going to make it. We're through. Okay. Question. Is it wise or is it foolish to take a bus from Pokhara to Kathmandu? Votes.
What's the option?
Fly. Get a plane. 20 minutes instead of about 8 hours. A bit more expensive. Well, what do you think? If you put yourself in the mind of a Nepalese person who's been brought up in a system which is very fatalistic, your fate depends on your karma,
stuff in the past, you can't change it, what will happen, that's deep in your thinking, deep in the way you behave and the way you think about all sorts of things. So is overtaking on a blind corner that risky? If your number's up, it's up, otherwise it'll be fine. And of course, if you were to take the plane and your number was up, then the plane would go down. So you may as well take the bus. Point being, important point here, wisdom and foolishness depends, doesn't it? What is wise for somebody is foolish for somebody else. We would approach a trip on the bus very rationally, do our risk assessment. We might not write it down and file it as we're meant to do at work, but we might do it anyway and decide we go by plane rather than on the bus. Okay. Just a thought. Wisdom, foolishness. It depends on your standpoint. Right. Introduction for this morning. What I want to do, and I'm setting this out at the beginning because in the end you might be confused. Okay. I want to show the message of the cross of Jesus Christ is simple and powerful in saving people from this sad, sin-sick world, and that this salvation does not depend on wise, logical, eloquent presentation of the gospel, nor does it need signs and wonders, nor does it need great wisdom and theology an understanding. In fact, and this is an important point from this morning, those things which we may think are so important or may be important actually can rob the power of Jesus' cross from doing what it needs to do. The power can be robbed by those things. That is Paul's warning. Okay, got a bit of boom here, Kyle, can you turn me down a little bit? Right, so Easter was not particularly something to celebrate on an annual basis. Jesus did give us instruction, though, to do it much more frequently than that, didn't he? Bread and the wine, maybe every week. He picked two very simple things to remember it. To remember his death and resurrection, because it is so central. And that is the other important point to remember, that the cross is an essential, central message for us to take on board. Now, Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians 1 verse 17. This is actually the verse before we're meant to... meant to be looking at the passage we're looking at today, but it's really important. Christ did not send me to baptize, Paul wrote to the Corinthians, but to preach the gospel, not with wisdom and eloquence, lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power. I just want to home in on this, first of all, and there's a warning here. Not with wisdom and eloquence. And I want to make my first point of this three-point sermon. There's a danger here that wisdom and eloquence get in the way. Now, this is partly an encouragement for us. Many of us are probably not that wise. Certainly I'm not. When it comes to, when you think wise, think understanding of theology, understanding the scriptures, understanding all the depths of God's word. And I don't want you to take this wrong, because it does have an importance. It is significant, but it's not central. It's important, but not central. Do you understand that? Maybe think about how many successful quote-unquote churches there are, how many successful parachurch organisations that there are, where there is a single charismatic gifted leader who heads it up and people follow. Now, not that that's necessarily wrong, but there's a warning here, and I think that's the point. There is a danger.
how easy it is for us to be inspired by wisdom and eloquence and drawn in that way. And at the same time, it's an encouragement, because those of us who are not particularly eloquent, not like Ian and people like that who can communicate very well from the front, you know, people like me who open their mouths and a series of disjointed words come out and it's difficult to understand and so on. There's hope for us, because the message of the gospel is not dependent on eloquence and wisdom. It's dependent on the power of the cross. And that, therefore, is a more important aspect than the eloquence. Now, why, you might say, why? Well, I've probably given you the answer already. Lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power. That's a very strong statement, emptied of its power. It's just this potential for eloquence and good presentation to actually mask and empty the power that is beneath it. And it's the power that is necessary to change people's lives. That's the fundamental thing. Think about the parable of the sower and the seeds. And the seeds that fell into shallow ground and sprung up, but they didn't have any root. There was no depth. There was a shallowness in their faith. Our faith can't be based on intellect, our understanding, on head knowledge, on emotion. It has to be based on a deep work of Jesus Christ in our hearts. So, point three. What is power? What is this power that we're talking about here? Physics. Power is to do with work and distance and time and stuff. Is it to do with that? Or is it in social sciences? We talk about power as being that of authority, influence, control. Or what? If we just look at the next part of the passage, verses 18 through to 21. We'll read this through. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. And you probably have to read that passage about six times before you begin to understand what Paul's saying. And I don't want to spend too much time in there. I just want to home in, first of all, on two words, perishing, which we find right at the beginning, and then to be saved. Two things in particular. What does this mean, perishing, to be saved? And the point here is that we live in a sad world, don't we? And this week has been no exception. The tragedy in Tunisia this week with a bunch of tourists being shot dead. Things that go on in the world every day, every week. Eve, back in the garden, back at the beginning, back in Genesis, she was speaking to the serpent, to the devil, and she said this. She said to him, but God did say, you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it or you will die. You will certainly not die, the snake said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Now, some people like to take that the story of the garden literally. Some people like to say take it as an allegory. But one way or the other, either way, the message is clear that man's disobedience led to him being driven from that garden of God's perfect supply, perfect provision. Paul said to the Romans, sin entered the world through one man and death through sin. And in this way, death came to all people because all sinned. Very, very clear message in the Bible. And we're all under this curse. We're all under this judgment. We all get old. We all go grey and wrinkly. We all age. We get sick. And eventually death comes to all man. All men, all women. There's no... God hasn't taken us out of that yet. And creation is sick too. Paul writes again in Romans 8, creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. Think of what goes on in the world. Think of the natural disasters. Typhoon in Vanuatu just a couple of weeks ago, going back over the years, earthquakes, tsunamis, destruction. Jesus referred in the Gospels in his time on earth to the prince of the power of the air. And we need to understand that there is a power in this world that brings destruction, that brings that is corrupted nature. And it impacts on our lives every day, the way we work. The things that go on at work, the things that happen to us day by day. Cursed is the ground because of you, God said to Adam. Through painful toil you'll eat food from it all the days of your life, and it'll produce thorns and thistles for you, and you'll eat plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you'll eat your food. See, if you have problems at work, things go wrong. I remember Russell last year, was it? All the hours and hours of effort and that went into the design of a new gearbox, and when it was built it made too much noise, it whined. You know, that is the frustration. James and his steering gear at TRW. You know, hours and hours of effort goes into into working, and what does it produce? Thorns and thistles. It's the nature of the curse of the world that we live in. That things go wrong. Things don't happen in the way they should. In a very natural sense, it happens to all of us. Stress. So many people suffer from stress, don't they? We shouldn't be surprised when the curse kicks in and affects us in a practical way. It's the way of the world. Think of how much time we spend as a church praying for those who are sick. You know, at the moment, Claire, Georgina, Iva now, Hazel and her back, Neil, there's Neil, you know, and his situation. It, on and on. Every week at house group, at least, I don't know, 50, 70% of the things we pray for is sickness and ill health. It's all part of this. It was great just to hear your testimony of the snowdrops and the hope and the springtime and flowers. And it's true, isn't it? Creation, God has created a wonderful world which has been spoilt, but that wonder shines through from time to time. Just a couple of weeks ago, you probably know, we were in Uganda with John and Charlotte, and we went over to the west, and you know, the lakes and the hills are beautiful. It's a wonderful area, and the animals and so on. But if you go in the lakes, there's bilharzia in them. You know, it's been spoilt. Bilharzia is this nasty little bug which buries into your skin and works its way to your liver and makes you sick. It's creation is fallen. Everything is spoilt. But, and this is the point, this is the message of the cross of Jesus Christ. This is the central thing. God has said that there will be a day when this is all going to end. It's all going to pass away. It's all going to be burned up. There's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. Everything that's been tainted and spoilt by sin is going to be destroyed. It'll all be judged. Everything will perish. That's the statement, that's the promise. But also, God has promised that some will be saved. And here we come to the cross. God's promise is that there will be salvation. And that's the second point here. Perishing, salvation. Two key words. And the problem is not a natural one. That's why the danger is there of intellect. The problem is a spiritual one. Sin is a spiritual power. And the solution has to be a spiritual solution. So the power is not that of physics. It's not to do with electricity. It's not to do with motion and time and force. Neither is it really the power of social sciences, of sway and influence and authority. And that is the danger of human wisdom and human eloquence, is that it addresses things at that level. It addresses it at the intellectual level, at the emotional level, and not in the depths of the heart where sin dwells, where sin needs to be overcome and rooted out. Sorry, I should have put that one up before. So, we move on to the fourth point of my three. Sorry, couldn't count, or I ran out of numbers. We need to consider the cross, the power of the cross. Because this is an interesting one, isn't it? Because Jesus' death, suffering and death, and this is always something that I've struggled through and maybe had to think through this past week. His suffering at the cruel hands of the Roman Empire was not exceptional. It was not unique. Even on that day, he was one of three, wasn't he? That were crucified on that day. And many thousands of Jews suffered that fate, that painful, agonizing death. And many thousands of other nationalities too. In fact, the history shows that at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, which is just 30, 40 years later, the hills around Jerusalem were bristling with crosses. There were hundreds and hundreds of people suffered that death. But the wonder of Jesus' death is like the wonder of his birth. And James mentioned the eclipse, and that sort of brought a picture to my mind. Because in the same way that Jesus was born in a cow shed, and many children over the centuries have been born in cow sheds, and because that's what happens in India, in Africa. Yet, the wonder is that God, who is so much more powerful, so. We went out in Birmingham to look at the eclipse on Wednesday, was it? And even with 95% of the sun covered up, you still can't look at it. That is the power of the sun in terms of its brightness, and it is burning. And yet God made it. God is so much more huge and powerful in every sense. So how could he be compressed into a tiny baby? That is the wonder of it. And how could all that glory, all that wonder, all that power, all that righteousness, how could that be nailed to a cross? How does it happen? You see, if you look at Islam, they say it cannot be. We cannot believe it. Islam will not accept that Jesus was the Son of God. God could not die. It couldn't happen. Logic says it can't. And it was the same with the Jews. They said impossible. It was a stumbling block. The Jews demand signs, the Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. A stumbling block to the Jews, foolishness to the Greeks. The Greeks were great thinkers. They couldn't get it. They couldn't understand it. They said it was a stupid, foolish idea. Impossible. And yet, somewhere in this, the spiritual reality of sin and death and God's justice and righteousness met head on. And the outcome was the release of this great power that broke the power of sin and death. And the secret is the cross. I don't know how, but it is. And it's, that's where we must stand. That's the, Charles Wesley understood it. He said, he wrote, "He breaks the power of cancelled sin. He sets the prisoner free. His blood can make the foulest clean. His blood avails for me." That is the truth of the gospel. That is the power of the cross. Now, what does it mean for us? Running out of space. My fifth of the third 3 points. I need a new page. This is the power that can save us from what's going on in this sin-sick world. A world that's doomed. And it's the power that can radically change the life of a man and a woman and a child. It's a power that brings light when there was darkness. Ron was praying for Georgina, and Georgina is desperately sick, and yet something in her heart is burning bright, and that is the power of Jesus. That, you know, when all around is hopeless, there is joy, even when in the natural it's despair. When everything is hopeless, somewhere deep down there's hope. The light burns. The point in this passage is that we need to beware. That's the point that I think we need to take away with us today. To beware. Not that they're wrong. Not that they're not, in some ways, important, but they're not central. The thought that we need these gifts of eloquence and wisdom is great, but it's not central. It's not crucial. It's not central. Maybe thinking that miracles and healings are, I don't know, I need to be careful what I say here. There are churches who feel that their spiritual temperature is measured by signs and wonders. And signs and wonders are such a blessing. But they're not central. That's where we need to be careful. Great teaching and theology. God has given us minds to understand. And this is a weakness of mine. I get an enjoyment, I love it. I listen to Martin Lloyd-Jones going through, you know, he goes through phrase by phrase. It can be five sermons on one verse. And yet, there's no salvation in that. It's wonderful. It presses my buttons intellectually, I think. Maybe some of it filters through to my heart. I hope it does. But that's not the key. That's not the core. The Greeks seek after wisdom. The Jews require signs. You see the point. So, Paul finishes, beginning of the next chapter. "And so it was with me, brothers and sisters, when I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or human wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I came to you in weakness, with great fear and trembling. My message and my preaching were not in wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power." So, the message of the cross of Jesus Christ is powerful. It's powerful in saving people from this sad, sin, sick world. this salvation does not, this is where I started off from, it doesn't depend on wise or logical or eloquent presentation, nor does it need signs and wonders and miracles, and nor does it need great theological understanding. Those things are great, but they're not central. The power of God is the foolishness of the message of Christ. That's my conclusion. So, I hope you're not too confused. Wisdom, foolishness. I'm gonna hand back to the music team. Is that all right, Chris? We've got a couple more songs to sing, just in response to the wonder of the message of Jesus Christ and the wonder of the cross.